So thanks inadvertently to our previous speaker, Carl, regarding his use of cover crops in preventing nitrate leaching. I'm going to talk a little bit about cover crops as potential biofuel crops and their impact on nitrous oxide emissions. Before I go on, I'd just like to acknowledge my co-authors, Dr. Bass from MSU Extension, and Professor Phil Robertson, who's the head of the research group here at Kellogg Biological Station, where we're doing this work. So, objective and overview of the work here that I'm presenting. It's part of a larger experiment. I'll just talk briefly about cover crops and N2O here, but as we're no doubt familiar, nitrous oxide is the largest contributor to the greenhouse gas burden of cropping systems in the US. There's not too much data out there on N2 emissions from these cover crop systems. And by cover crop systems here, I'm talking about winter cover crop systems between annual cash crops such as corn and soybean. And the idea that the use of a cover crop can effectively be seen as perennializing an annual crop system through the year-round cover can obviously provide some benefits. Many of the benefits of we know of cover crops are it could potentially provide climate stabilization with regards to additional soil carbon, and perhaps, as I'll talk about here, N2O mitigation. And also there's the opportunity in the current climate to potentially use some of these the biomass from these cover crops as a potential biofuel feedstock in addition to some of the grain crops such as corn, which are currently used. So the ones we'll look at here, the three cover crops we'll identify, one is a legume, one is a grass, one is a brassica. So here we are in southwest Michigan at the WK Kellogg Biological Station. Just a quick overview of some of the information there with regards to topography. Around about a meter of rain, 10 degrees Celsius annual temperature. These are moderately fertile soils here at the northern end of the corn belt. So sort of clay to sandy loams. On the bottom graph there, you're seeing part of our experiment, the one I'll focus on today, four blocks there, multiple treatments. Again, I'll just focus on a small number. Plot size is roughly 10 feet by 70 feet. You'll see there that denoting ET and LT, which is referring to the early termination and late termination, and I'll talk a little bit more about that with regards to the cover crops. So management and sampling, again, it's an annual crop rotation in these systems, corn, soybean, and winter wheat, all phases each year. The cover crops we're talking about here, the grass is annual ryegrass, the legume is red clover, the brassica is oilseed radish. Here we're talking about a conventional management system. We have a sister site with all organic management. I won't talk about that, but I can discuss it later with questions or after the talk. So we're talking about synthetic nitrogen here, urea, ammonium nitrate, chisel plowing, herbicides, the use of pesticides, and gas sampling events throughout the 2 to 3 years we'll be talking about here, roughly 50 times over that period of time. Attempting to focus on the periods of time where we thought the N2 emissions may be higher. And many discussions here and elsewhere have talked about the complexities of trying to predict nitrous oxide emissions. So again, we can talk more about that in the context of the work as well if you want. Simple field and laboratory methods. It's a manual chamber sampling process. The bottom left shows our automated sampler. We're lucky in that we don't have to manually inject samples onto a GC. We have a vial sort of rack there that can do up to 400 samples in one go. It's very helpful. We're looking here at obviously the change in concentration over time on the right-hand side to get a handle on the slope. And there I've depicted a linear increase, but also we can cater for non-linear increases in our algorithms that we use, because I know that's another bone of contention with nitrous oxide flux communities. So here's some quick results. Over the 2 years where there were cover crops terminated into the succeeding cash crop in years 2013 and 2014, on the x-axis you've got the types of cover crop. In the far left, you have the no cover crop, and then you see annual ryegrass early and late termination, red clover early and late termination, and oilseed radish, which actually winter kills, but this is the impact of the oilseed radish in the corn crop after it was terminated earlier in that year. And you can see these are the total emissions over 2 years, average over 2 years. So what we're doing here is linearly interpolating between early 2013 and late 2013, and linearly interpolating between early 2014 and late 2014, and adding those two sums together. So we see we're not getting particularly large emissions in total from these systems, 1.5 in the cover, and no cover up to about maybe 2.5 to 3 in the red clover at the early termination plot. So not huge amounts of emissions. And you can see from the error bars, which are plus or minus one of standard error, they're not really statistically different, but there are obviously trends there that you can see. And I'll break that down a little bit better in the next slide. These are the average daily emissions from the 2 years from those same six treatments. You can see that, again, between February and October 2013, not a great deal happening, actually. A little bit more in the red clover, as you may expect. It's a legume. it's a higher N content, there's possibly more mineralization resulting in more nitrous oxide emissions. In 2014, there's a little bit more going on there. You can see that at the red clover, the early termination point, on average, there's a fairly decent, statistically significant increase in emissions associated with the red clover early termination, more so than the annual ryegrass and also the oilseed radish and the no cover. So a little bit going on there that we can interpret from residue quality and mineralization potentials of the residues from the red clover. Just to sort of step back a little and look at the actual emissions from the cash crops, as I mentioned before, this is a corn, soybean, wheat rotation. So not too surprisingly associated with the corn crop in each year in that rotation, you're seeing the higher emissions in 2012 and 2013 and 2014, roughly July and August, just post the fertilization of about 130 to 150 kilograms of UAN. And also you can see that although we didn't sample huge amounts in the shoulder in the winter season, there are, where we did sample, there were very little emissions. And this has been backed up by other automated studies that we have in these sites, showing that during the winter period between December and March, emissions aren't zero, but they're relatively small, such that we can have a little confidence in not sampling a great deal in the 3 feet of snow in southwest Michigan, that we're not actually missing samples. We've already done it with auto chambers. We don't have to do it with manual chambers, at least not in this context. So what I'll do here is just as a breakdown in 2014 to show what we think are the factors impacting on the emissions from the various cover crop systems. And here I'm just talking about the early termination of the cover crops here for the annual ryegrass and the red clover. And what you'll see here, this is the kill down, the herbicide kill down of the cover crop in roughly early May, and the subsequent flux measurements afterwards. And deliberately I've not put any error bars on here to not confuse the diagram, but you see that you could argue that, of course, we should have sampled many more times, and that's part of the issue with N2O, as we know, with manual chamber sampling. But you see there's certainly the herbicide kill down of the biomass from the cover crop, at least in the next measurement, which we took about a couple of weeks later, isn't showing much impact with regards to N2 emissions. All the four points are under that little dot there on the baseline with zero N2 emissions, more or less. You see that when we're planting the corn, turning over a bit of the land, now we see that the annual ryegrass and oilseed radish treatments aren't really showing much increase in emissions, maybe a little bit based around with the planting procedure. But the early termination red clover is certainly showing some much higher emissions, more or less an order of magnitude higher, around about 40 to 50 grams per hectare per day. We could attribute that, as I mentioned earlier, to the higher residue quality. As you can see, there's been intervening rain events, a warming up of the soil, so presumably quite a good likelihood of higher denitrification rates and more residue available from the high-quality red clover residue. What we see here is actually the fertilizer application to the corn crop after the cover crops. And again, you see some sort of impact of that on the non-legumes and on the and indeed on the no cover, where you get higher emissions associated with the fertilizer application, the N input, and also, as you see, the gray bars, the vertical gray bars of the rainfall events. So a fairly decent amount of rain at that time, no doubt also helping mobilize the fertilizer nitrogen for nitrous oxide emissions. And one more point to make, it near the end of the season where you'd expect less of an impact from the fertilizer directly, but you see that high rainfall event there near the end of the season, or at least in the late August, most likely had an effect on any available N that was left over from either the cover crop residues or the fertilizer, and caused some increases in the nitrous oxide emissions in all the systems that were there. So just some conclusions. Cover crop species and our treatments affected N2O fluxes differently. The early termination red clover treatment tended to increase the annual N2O emissions, particularly in 1 year. Annual ryegrass and oilseed radish really had no effect on total overall emissions compared to the no cover crop controls. There's a general trend for average daily N2 emissions from biofuel cover crop systems decreasing in the order of legume greater than grass, which is more or less similar to the brassica, the oilseed radish. The late cover crop termination effectively decreased the N2 emissions in the red clover, but didn't really have any impact on the annual ryegrass treatment. As you saw from that one graph there, the N2 emissions were always highest in the corn versus the soybean and the wheat, irrespective if there's any cover crop present or not. And as I saw from that last graph there, the highest N2O fluxes that we saw occurred following the fertilization events with nitrogen, soil disturbance, planting, and the termination of the cover crop, and also the rainfall event later in the season. And so with that, there's a take-home message there that cover crop effects in our system for the 2 years we've been looking at them so far do affect N2O emissions, and that effect varies by species. The legumes can increase the nitrous oxide emissions, but the non-legumes so far, we've found no evidence that total overall emissions have no effect on N2O emissions compared with the cover crop controls. And so with that, I'll leave that and ask for some questions.
Was termination herbicide and tillage, and was tillage the same across all
regions? Termination was herbicide and then a light incorporation, so it wasn't really tillage to any great depth. There's a few centimeters kind of at the surface. But that was the same across each cover crop system. As you know, the oilseed radish winter kill, so that wasn't done for that, but for the annual ryegrass and the red clover. The early termination and late termination were about 10 days, 2 weeks apart, if that helps.
Any more questions? Thank you very much.